Every Thursday night, you ask the questions, DT gives you his answers. No holds barred.
It's Q&A with Don Tony. This is your chance to speak your mind and be heard about anything.
Q&A with Don Tony. And now, your host, Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Don Tony.
Somebody asked it. Plan B. Plan B, that 1979 footage that was always heard about, but undiscovered for many a decade. Now everybody likes to bring it up. What could have, what should have, what if, blah, blah. We'll talk about it later. Now, I know I've probably piqued some of your interest out there. Be prepared. This is going to be about a one-hour episode, and 15 minutes of it will be a video clip. We're going to flash back to 1979 and look at an edited version. I edited it down. It's way too long in its original state, but I edited it down to about 15 minutes of video I think you'll find very interesting. I don't want to set it up yet. But, you know, I'll let you see something that was supposed to come out at that time, but didn't. And what would have happened to pro wrestling if this video would have come out? I have a very interesting response to that. And I have an interesting response to all of your questions. This is the Q&A mailbag. Now, you will be watching this Thursday, July 28th. Be told that I did this the day before, though. Thursdays, I spend it with family, so I record this Wednesday. We're literally right now about 2 hours before AEW Dynamite, so yours truly will be busy for the rest of the evening, so I want to get right into your questions, and thank you, everyone, for the awesome questions, and more importantly, thank you for everyone that did not send me things that requires a hell of a lot of research, a hell of a lot of thinking. You know, the idea is to answer as many as we can in a short period of time. I will tell you, I'm wearing a little bit of a different hat tonight. Every time I wear this hat and I look at myself in the computer screen, it makes me think of Vince McMahon when he used to wear the do-rags. Remember, ECW champion Vince McMahon. Interesting time. Really weird, interesting time with Vince back then. I saw that, what's his face? The head guy of UFC, Dana, he, gave a lot of love to Vince McMahon. And, he says that, you know, they didn't always get along, but he pretty much loves Vince McMahon. I'm sure people appreciate Dana White saying something like that in the midst of a sex scandal investigation. But, look, I mean, facts are facts. Vince McMahon entertained me for 43 years, giving me entertainment. And look, pro wrestling is still our world. Sure, it's not the WWE world, not like what it used to be. It's more inclusive with other promotions, but still very, very responsible for the fact that I am here, you know, being a wrestling fan still, be doing this podcast, the bond that I used to have with my grandmother, God rest her soul, hanging out with my friends in the basement, you know, wrestling in the 80s and getting legit knocked the fuck out. You know, WWF was a very, very important part of my life. Sure, WWF, for a lot of you, or WWE, was not always a very important part of your wrestling life. But for me, it was. And we'll open up with a question about Vince. And this is interesting because I did a Patreon show last night. And our VIPers sent questions in. And there's at least two or three questions on this list that were asked yesterday. And it's not the same people. And the people that asked it for this show are not patrons. So it's pretty interesting to see almost word for word the questions being asked again. But the first question that we're going to get into, since we mentioned Vince, and I think this is a question, it's going to cross everybody's mind sooner than later. And it's an interesting discussion. I think it's actually a little bit of a bland discussion, and I'll tell you why. And yes, because I answered this yesterday, I kind of have a good idea in my mind what I'm going to say right now. But JR asks, what would the wrestling business have been like without Vince McMahon Jr.? Would the territory still exist? Do we think someone else, like a Vince McMahon, would have come along? Well, you don't know that aspect of it. Ted Turner always wanted to be in the wrestling business, so I think Ted Turner would have still gotten involved in wrestling. But, you know, the one of the questions I was asked yesterday is, who do I think amongst Vern Gagne, Fritz Von Erich, you know, and others would have stepped up and been that big-time promoter that maybe not the level of what Vince McMahon brought WWF and later WWE, but still would have taken wrestling to new heights? I don't think there is anybody. I don't think there is anybody because Vern Gagne was so much about tradition. Jim Crockett was not about the rock and wrestling connection all that much. Not necessarily so much with Hollywood. I mean, what was the first big exposure, one of the first big exposures, and it kind of ties into another question later on in this episode, you know, RoboCop. I mean, you didn't see wrestlers, when wrestlers in NWA and WCW early on appeared in movies, you know, they would be a fighter, they would be in a bar. We had wrestling theme in a movie, The Wrestler, back in the 70s. But you never saw, like, someone like a Hulk Hogan or someone that was going to go on to Hollywood. You know, we were talking yesterday, a Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazine that has stuck in my head for decades and it'll never leave my mind. And I remember the saying word for word, and I think it was Cressman flashed it on the screen yesterday, and yeah, it was exactly word for word. I remember it clearly. When Hulk Hogan appeared on Rocky III and it took off, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, an infamous magazine cover that had Hogan, you know, with his big cape, thunder lips, and it said, you know, Hulk Hogan at the crossroads, wrestling or Hollywood. And at that time, you know, there was a lot of buzz that Hulk Hogan was going to leave pro wrestling to go to Hollywood. Remember how Vern Gagne used Hulk Hogan? He felt that he was much more money chasing for the title than actually being champion. And what would have happened after Hogan became champion? I don't think Vern Gagne wanted Hulk Hogan to go to Hollywood. I don't think you would have had that crossover. Without Vince McMahon, you wouldn't have had the rock and wrestling connection. I believe, obviously, we would have had a Super Bowl type of wrestling event, whether Vince was around or not. But I don't think anyone out there in pro wrestling at that time, as far as promoters, bookers, had that vision that it could rub elbows in the entertainment world, in the mainstream pop music world. You know, I think Memphis, when Andy Kaufman was a real interesting exception, but it was still regional. It was still regional. And I personally think that if Vince McMahon never existed, we would still have territories. Wrestling would never have gone away. But I think wrestling would have still been more of that underground. I think the only time wrestling would have possibly changed a little bit and reflected similar was the 90s. I think with the, you know, creation of Girls Gone Wild and Jerry Springer and Ultimate Fighting and, you know, everything going against the grain, I think you would have saw that hybrid of almost ECW type of wrestling, some hardcore things like that. I mean, it was already happening in Japan. But no, if Vince McMahon would have never come along, pro wrestling would not be the size that it ended up becoming. There was no one else with that vision. No one else with that vision. After, I brought this up yesterday, look at when Hulk Hogan signed with WCW, what, 1993? That was WCW's thinking, like, if we're going to compete with WWE, WWF at the time, and we're going to try to overtake them, we got to do it now. Midst of a steroid scandal, Hulk Hogan leaving WWF, if there was ever a time, we got to get in now. And then you got Savage, then you got others, and then you realize that WCW was kind of like turning into WWF. They were using some of the same formula. A lot of people don't realize that a lot of what Vince McMahon did in the mid-80s were done in other promotions. You know, some of the feuds, some of what you saw on WWF television. It was done in the AWA. It was done in other territories. The thing is that those territories never made it national. And that was the thing. So, no, I don't think wrestling would have ever become as big as it did. And, you know, that's why you can never predict it, because you don't know who else would not have gotten bitten by the wrestling bug, even just for the entertainment value. You know, even if they didn't grow up being a pro wrestling fan, maybe they would have never gotten involved, that they would have still had to travel up and down the road, you know, you didn't have that entertainment crossover. I think some of the biggest stars may have never entered the world of pro wrestling. So, James Campbell, how much longer do I think Roman Reigns keep championships till the overall opinion of his character is stale? When he drops them, do the championships split or stay unified? Well, I talked about this in detail about Drew McIntyre. I don't want to say concern is I could picture Drew McIntyre winning the Unified Championship at Clash at the Castle. Be a very interesting choice for him to be the one to dethrone Roman Reigns. They sold 70,000 tickets already. Those 70,000 fans want something big to go down, and I think it will. But I could also picture Drew McIntyre getting on the microphone on the next Raw or SmackDown and says, I'm a fighting champion. I think we have two belts. I think I should defend both titles on both brands. I could see the Drew McIntyre character saying that, and I think that's how the titles will ultimately split. Roman Reigns' character is not stale, and it's morphing a little bit. Roman Reigns is acting more like a tweener now. You know, he went from full-blown heel to now tweener, cutting speeches at house shows, showing appreciation for the fans. And that, you know, tweaking of his character is going to prevent it from becoming stale. So, no, I don't think Roman Reigns' character is going to become stale anytime soon. I think there is a very good chance that Drew McIntyre wins that title at Clash at the Castle. We got SummerSlam to go through, and look, with Brock Lesnar, anything could happen. But if it doesn't happen at SummerSlam, Clash at the Castle, in my eyes right now, is a good possibility. It's not a definite, yeah, it's still too early to tell, but it sure feels like it could be leading that way. And just think of how much WWE thinks about Drew McIntyre, that he possibly could be the one to dethrone Roman. Rams fan, if I could choose for my wrestling company one of these two people, and which one do I think would reach a further potential, Ricky Starks or Austin Theory? Boy, that is really, really rough, because they are two totally different characters. Ricky Starks is an entertainer. He is also a phenomenal wrestler, and Austin Theory is still much earlier in his career. Austin Theory comes off more as this annoying, cocky. I mean, Ricky Starks comes off as annoying too, but if I had a choice right now in their current states, I would choose Ricky Starks. But a year, 2 years from now, it might be the opposite. I would possibly go with Austin Theory. I mean, Austin Theory is coming along nicely, and he is really starting to come into his own. The way he handles the crowd with the what chants and everything like that, that should not be, you know, underappreciated, because, you know, a lot of people, they just lose it. They lose their train of thought. That guy's smooth. People want to see him get his ass kicked. You know, that's a big difference between, you know, go away heat. But I still think Austin Theory is a few years away from, you know, once you get there, you feel like you're there, and you stay there. You think of Drew, Roman, Cody, Seth, Bobby Lashley, others. I mean, not everybody is pushed to the promised land at the same time, but in any given night, any one of them could main event a house show. Nobody would have a problem with it. Austin Theory's not on that level yet. Neither is Ricky Starks, but if I were to choose one or two for right now, I would choose Ricky Starks. Chatty Charani, who do I think has more historical wrestling knowledge, Dave Meltzer or Jim Cornette? I have to go with Jim Cornette. I am a big fan of Meltzer. I'm a big fan of Cornette. There was one point that I used to despise Cornette. Jim Cornette impresses the fuck out of me, especially when he's having conversations with Brian Last, and he'll just start throwing out you know, specifics about events and people and stories and this and that. I'm not saying that Dave Meltzer doesn't. Dave Meltzer is a great historian, but Dave Meltzer, it's more about reporting it. You know, if you live through it and you report it, accurate or not accurate, or even if he got the news from other sources, you know, he is a good historian. Jim Cornette has lived through a lot of this, and he understands, and he has been there and with his own eyes witnessing a lot of what Dave Meltzer has reported. So as far as wrestling knowledge, I think Jim Cornette definitely is bigger than Dave Meltzer, but it's different because Dave Meltzer is a writer, journalist, you know, wasn't a wrestler manager, you know, sort of, you know, like Cornette was. But Cornette just really, when he starts throwing out history, and he does get some wrong. I mean, you listen to it sometimes, but still, that guy is sharp as a tack, and he impresses me big time. All right, Elijah Galvin. With Vince McMahon now retired and the changes happening in WWE, do I see some big names that were let go returning? Will it make it easier for AEW talent who want to jump ship? I don't think it'll make it easier. You know, again, even though Vince McMahon was at the helm, CEO, 51% ownership, head of creative, he's still majority owner of that company. Vince McMahon still has say. A lot of people try to make you think that he's just going to sit home on a farm and, you know, maybe bang women all day long. Vince McMahon will still have input in WWE. He should. He didn't commit any crimes. Yeah, he might have had some inappropriate behavior and, you know, the NDAs are not good, but he's still majority owner of a company. That doesn't go away. People want it to go away. But, you know, my point is that Stephanie and Triple H were not locked in a box the last 20 years. They're part of the WWE machine. They're not outsiders. They're not brand new to the company. So, you know, I don't expect as much to change as people think. And I think as long as Vince McMahon is alive, even more of a reason. I think you may see a younger influx of people being pushed. You might see some names, you know, possibly. But again, you know, people keep trying to compare to Triple H and NXT. As much as we enjoyed it, that's a promotion that only drew 700,000, even with him at the helm. Didn't generate crazy merchandise. Didn't generate big pay-per-view buys, even with established names all over NXT. People, I think, are more into the fact that someone else than Vince is in charge now creatively than actually what could change creatively. There's a big difference there. You know, when you really take a step back, you know, you might get a lot of very similar. And look at the first Raw. We know they weren't going to turn it up on its head, but if you look at the first Raw, not much was different. The opening felt like SmackDown. We had a match that ended with a bullshit DQ that turned into a tag match. You got Asuka wrestling on main event. Alexa Bliss is the next one in line to feud with Bianca. Not, you know, so you really start breaking it down. We had a lot of Austin Theory. My curiosity is going to be a 24/7 title. The first time that 24/7 title does the same bullshit as it did before, that's, I think, where Triple H is going to get a lot of heat. But I do think something will change with the 24/7. In fact, I think the 24/7 title might be the first thing to have a different shift. Do I think it's going away? No. No. Something where a celebrity could win something. Something that can be utilized in the entertainment world. And, yeah, I could see that still sticking around, but I do expect something to change with the 24/7 title. Take note that between Monday with Triple H, his first Raw, full creative, to even today, which has only been a couple of days, no one thought about 24/7 title. Like, what's going to happen with that? So it's going to be really interesting to see. And if it's the same antics, you're going to realize that, you know, these people were not in a box. you know, just waiting, like chomping at the bit that, oh, if I get control, I'm going to turn this shit upside down. Mm-mm. Nope. Wrong thinking. George Ford, if I were Tony Khan and decided to trim my roster, who would I keep? Boy, that is a loaded freaking question, man. I mean, probably the better answer is who would I not keep? You know, I'll answer it like this, because I'm not going to go down the roster and say, oh, get rid of, you know, Jamie Hayter and keep this person. You know, it's unfair to say it like that. But I will say this. There's really no need for AEW Dark or AEW Elevation. There's no need for 25 matches of bullshit every week, all right? Because it doesn't feel like those are being used to elevate the stars of tomorrow. It just feels like it's padding stats. I've been saying that for probably 2 years now. Those shows are padding stats. That's all it is. When you take minor league, you know, I compare it to minor league. You take like AEW Dark, it's not, to me, main roster, and someone wins 50 matches on Dark, and then you show them up on Dynamite, and it says record 50-6. That's bullshit. You know, that's bullshit. You know, I want to see the wrestlers utilized on Dynamite and Rampage. Elevation and Dark could be used for the right reasons, so I don't think those are necessary. If you want to have one show where you do that, fine. You know, I don't think you need Dark and Elevation. And the only reason why you have that is because they have so many people hired. Tony Khan wants his money's worth. That's why you have so many people. You have trios matches. You have big factions. You have 15 matches on Dark. Each one only goes 2 minutes long. You know, the guy has too many toys in the room. So I would get rid of 20, 30, you know, of these, right? Even if they're paid per appearance, it's just not necessary. It's too much. And that's why a lot of these wrestlers, but look, a point that you'll probably hear me bring up on some Wednesdays here and there. You really look at Tony Storm, Athena, and others, and you'll have people that'll try to tell you that they're being used better in AEW than WWE. Are they becoming household names in AEW? No, they're not. No, they're not. And with the WWE machine, you know, someone ultimately does become a bigger household name. And that's why with a lot of wrestlers, when they're covered on mainstream news, they'll still be referenced under their WWE work than even AEW. Look at Jeff Hardy. I mean, when Jeff Hardy had a lot of his shit go down, a lot of places were saying, oh, you know, WWE wrestler. They didn't reference AEW at all. And I'm sure AEW is very happy about that because, you know, it happened under AEW's watch. But a lot of these wrestlers, you know, I know, and some people probably say, well, becoming a household name shouldn't be the be-all, end-all. Okay, I get that. You know, but at the same time, you know, it's perception. And when someone is kicking ass and you realize that it's for YouTube shows, and then when they're on, you know, they're on Rampage or Dynamite, it's mostly cutting promos for 3 out of 4 weeks. You know, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors, in my opinion. All right. Robert Kay hasn't tuned in a while. Life had changed in some ways for him. One of my thoughts on Ric Flair's last match, thought on Billy Corgan's NWA. Billy Corgan damaged his promotion. That 20-year plan is probably not a 30-year plan. I understand pulling back because of COVID, but it just felt like he really didn't want to spend the money to still continue and try to keep a little momentum and really try to stand out at a time. Look, I don't blame promotions for not wanting to work during COVID, but the thing is that AEW did. WWE did, and some others did. And yeah, you had some people get sick, but now you're realizing, you know, like the majority of the world is getting COVID, even if they have been vaccinated. It was probably unavoidable in many cases. Billy Corgan, unfortunately, I think, damaged his promotion significantly. Some people got up and left because Billy Corgan wasn't just going to pay people just to stay on the roster and not be used. And as a result, his promotion is all over the place. I am very concerned about NWA's future, to be honest with you. And I wanted to, I was loving NWA prior to COVID. I just think he wasted a big opportunity and it damaged his company. As far as Ric Flair's last match, I don't like it. I don't think someone close to 80 years old with major heart surgery with a pacemaker should be doing that. You know, imagine the doctors, heart doctors, cardiologists. I mean, how do you sign off on that? I mean, of all, and again, remember where this is being taken place. Like you said, you haven't tuned in a while, but a lot of people don't even understand that there's literally the State Athletic Commission for wrestling in Nashville is non-existent. So if this was a different state, Ric Flair probably would not be wrestling this coming weekend. I just hope that he gets through it okay. Other wrestlers are wrestling in their 70s. You look at Jerry Lawler and others. But still, with his health condition, what a fucking risk. And I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel comfortable. I think there's going to be a lot of people, after the match is over, they're going to go, thank God. I hope nothing happens. I hope nothing happens. But I don't feel comfortable. And yeah, I know what somebody's going to say. Well, Terry Funk's your favorite wrestler. What if Terry Funk had those health conditions and had one last opportunity? I don't know if I would want to see that. I think I would cry. Seriously, I think I would cry. I mentioned this story. You know, one of the times I hung out with Daphne, God rest her soul, and we took a ride to Lynbrook, Long Island. They were doing a wrestling convention about, I don't know, 15 years ago? 15 years ago. And Terry Funk was there. And I've met Terry Funk countless times over the years. I walked up to him. I shook his hand. And I always knew he had bad arthritis, but I remember shaking his hand. And I almost broke down in tears. You could see his fingers were all like swollen and pointing in different directions. And that was 15 years ago. And, you know, I don't want to see someone that I, you know, idolized, looked up to, loved, to see them, you know, mortal. I'm getting married September 3rd. My uncle has stage 4 cancer. My father went to see his brother this past weekend and had refused for a couple of months because he doesn't want to see his brother like that. And he decided to go because he said, what am I going to do, wait until he's dead? When I see my uncle, I'm going to break down. I have no idea what he looks like right now, but all I know is that he is frail upon belief. You don't want to see somebody in that condition. So I don't want to see Ric Flair in this condition, you know, where you got to really, really hope to God that, you know, something doesn't go seriously wrong. You know, just because you feel it in here doesn't mean that it should be happening. And if something does tragically go wrong, you know, that is a huge Russian roulette risk being taken amongst a lot of people there. I don't think you'll see any lawsuits or anything like that, but I think a lot of people will be accused of being greedy. You know, it was about a payday. A lot of people were saying, oh, it's not about the payday. Ric Flair could care less about money. Like, yeah, come on, man. You know, we're not that stupid. But hey, if he could get paid, good for him. Puffy 89, recently the blackout of 77 was brought up on a sit-down episode. Any memory of the blackout of 03? Yeah, I do remember that clearly. I remember in 03 having my boombox, having water, kept opening up my freezer, hoping that things wouldn't melt. I went to my father's deli, and my brother's like, look, take whatever you want. Take whatever ice cream, dairy, because all that shit was going to get thrown away anyway. I still have all the claims that I put through for all the, you know, perishable stores that I insured at that time. They all had to throw their stuff away. We had to take pictures and document it all. I ate like a pig for 2 days because, you know, that food cannot be resold. So I sat in my house. I remember having all the windows open. I remember, you know, having enough batteries. I always have you know, my boombox is here. I got a giant boombox collection from the 80s still. And I just cranked it and, you know, just stuck it through. Ate like a pig, did nothing else. Maybe took a drive, if I remember correctly. The 03 was not bad. I mean, it was frustrating. I mean, I wanted to watch TV. I wanted to do my hotline at the time. I do have some early podcasts where we, right after that blackout, I just haven't had a chance to repost them. So, Charlie Conway. Charlie, your question's always interesting because I don't even know if they are questions. I will give it a shot. Why didn't I bother on matrimony recently? I have no idea what you mean, but we will be seeing a judge the first week in August. Why didn't I prefer original Power Rangers? I didn't like the Power Rangers growing up. I thought they were goofs. I wanted to give them a wedgie. Go, 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 Power. No, go, go is Gadget. News Radio thoughts, never watched it. Alexa, Extreme Rules pictures, don't know. Which way were they implementing the Attitude Era? Were things different then? Don't know. Which stuff does Lenny say on the September 11 attacks? Okay. That I'll get back to in a minute. Why did he sue me? And Stephanie, I guess he posted this before Monday. Were we going to see Stephanie on Monday? Well, we didn't see Stephanie on Monday. Captain Lenny was a hotline host. He said some very vicious things about the victims of September 11th. I have it recorded. I played it once on the Thursday show, and he is one weird mofo. This is somebody, everyone, who used to do a wrestling hotline. Jim Cornette has talked about Captain Lenny. Captain Lenny is a legend, and I have probably about 9 hours of him calling my old hotline and leaving me messages, 20, 30 messages a night, and it's all whack stuff. Go on my channel, just type in Lenny in the search box and just listen to some of the stuff I have. It's weird. Weird is probably the best way. Why did he sue me? I don't know. He just wanted to sue me. He tried to sue me. I have to play that Mass Maniac episode where the Mass Maniac asks him, why are you trying to sue Anthony? I don't even remember his answer, but it was weird. Bill Butler, shout out to you, my friend. He's been hanging out with Greg the Hammer Valentine, and he showed me this picture. Them hanging out at the restaurant dining. He's friends with Greg the Hammer. I am always loving photos of Greg the Hammer. I had the opportunity of working one show with Greg the Hammer Valentine. That was the night that I did Deli Man. Greg the Hammer Valentine was on that show. And very, very cool. Very cool. Greg... You don't see him smile much ever. Like, it's very rare if you ever see Greg Hammer Valentine have a big smile on his face. But very cool. Very cool. How long are we going? 33 minutes? I think, all right, we'll be right around an hour. I think we could swing it. Kevon Lewis. Oh, wait, no, we'll get back to you. You're the plan B question. I know what you're saying right now. Why am I so against it? Blazing Bolts, who do I think wins the G1 and faces IWGP World Heavyweight Champion Jay White at Wrestle Kingdom 23? I have no idea. It is way too soon. I am very fascinated by how quickly New Japan has gone on the back burner for mainstream wrestling fans. American and, you know, everyone except for Japan. It's amazing how quickly no one talks about them anymore. I mean, I know you do, and you're a big fan, and I commend you for that. But I showed everyone those access ratings. They got no bump during the whole Forbidden Door shit. They got no bump whatsoever. And now to see it literally just fade away like that, it was a fun event. And again, you know, it definitely helped both promotions. It's AEW made money on it. New Japan got more American exposure from it. But it's amazing to see how quickly it just faded into the distance. I got to see if a couple of names you know, like Will Ospreay and others, if they start getting, I mean, look, he is a name in the United States, no question. But for mainstream wrestling fans, that's someone who they may have heard of, may have seen him on one show, but never really, you know, they were never on their radar. I got to see who stays in some wrestling fans' radar from New Japan. Right now, I just don't feel like there's much of anybody. So it's really difficult to answer that. SoFly, who do I think is more WWE star potential, Hammerstone or Jacob Fatu? Hammerstone all the way. Even though Vince is not in the creative picture, although consultant, he would fit the mantra for WWE. He's got charisma, clicks with the fans. He's got that crazy-ass energy. I like Jacob Fatu, don't get me wrong. But I don't know, there's just something, like I could see him in NXT. But I don't know where he would fit on Raw or SmackDown. So Hammerstone all the way. Do I think there's anyone who could touch Roman Reigns right now? His confidence and comfort level on the mic has been in another world. Props for saying that. I feel the same way. Roman Reigns doesn't have to do much. And the fans are fine with that. That's when you know when someone is there. He's in the zone, auto zone. He's in the zone. But like I said earlier, I think Drew McIntyre could very well be the one. I mean, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in SummerSlam. I do not think Roman Reigns will lose to Brock. I think there's going to be a boatload of fuckery going on. I think something almost weird may happen to Brock Lesnar. You know, maybe he gets screwed and just totally destroys the place. I don't know. But something different, I feel, is going to happen at SummerSlam. I think Drew might be the man. I think Drew may be the one. I just got that vibe. That Clash at the Castle, if that event was not happening, I probably would feel a little differently. But right now, I think Drew might be the one. Mr. Skull Duggery. Was Mark Henry's retirement segment on Raw one of the best gotcha moments in wrestling? That was awesome, man. When he came out there, my eyes were glassy. I remember, I still have my old hotline reports when Mark Henry, people were criticizing WWE for having like a 10-year contract with Mark Henry. I remember when that 10 years was coming close to an end. I remember some people like, oh, thank God this contract's coming to an end. Mark Henry early on, a lot of people did not like, they thought he was reckless. Not everybody was a big Mark Henry fan. I mean, look, when he did Sexual Chocolate, he kind of turned the corner a little bit. But he still had a lot of detractors. That night that we thought he was going to retire and it was a swerve with Cena, it was epic. That was awesome. And he fooled me and he fooled Eric. Some people would be like, he didn't fool me. He fooled pretty much everyone. That was great. That was great. Bill Evitz just recently started back checking out my shows. The last two Saturday morning shows have been awesome. Thank you. He can't thank me enough for the honesty, straight shooting, and understanding about everything going on with WWE. He stopped following many of the websites now because of their ignorance of the business and how corporations work, and it's showing badly. These shows have been tremendous. I thank you for the kind words. If you're going to cover a billion-dollar company, you got to understand how it runs, how it operates. And when you see people out there that intentionally ignore the facts because they need to push an agenda, they can't accept the fact that WWE answers to a higher power. They got to listen to stockholders, not internet wrestling community crybabies. There's some weird people on social media actually think that they are like getting through WWE's heads. They don't get it. Or they get it, but they need to, people went on a hill. Somebody was bringing up to me the other day, reminding me that some people legitimately claimed that WWE intentionally stressed out Triple H to the point where he caught a heart attack. No, they were not trying to make him catch a heart attack, but they stressed Triple H, tried to push him out so bad that he caught a heart attack because of it. Now these people apparently are psychologists and cardiologists, and apparently they were there in the meetings. You know, these people are just strange. When someone is no longer in a company, and then people suddenly break news that this person said this, that's when you know that they're full of shit. The latest that I heard was this wild claim about Shane McMahon, that Vince told people that as long as I'm around, Shane will never get a pop again. With all due respect for the people who reported it, you really think about that. You think Vince was just walking down the hallway and catering? Hey, boss, what's up? As far as I'm around, Shane gets no pop. Who do you think he told that to? You think he told that to Ricochet? You think he told it to Rey Mysterio? You think he told it? Who do you think Vince said that to? You know, I mean, come on. You know, people could throw wild claims, claiming that Vince, they know Vince is not going to go on social media and call him out on it. So, you know, people just, you know, it is what it is, man. I just focus on my thing. And, you know, as long as everybody enjoys it, that's what matters. Nero Faye, who do I think would win in a battle rap between Max Caster and John Cena? John Cena all the way. I am a big fan of Max Caster. Max Caster needs the cadence. He needs to hear the beat in his mind. That's why you hear him go, yo, listen, listen. Like, he's got to, like, get into that groove, and he's got to, you know, think about everything that he says. Look, when they did that thing with the Ass Boys last week, it was good, but he talked two times as much. Like, he's so organized that if it becomes disorganized, I think he gets all messed up and scrambled. John Cena, if you've never seen it, there's a footage from many years ago of John Cena, I think, outside in a parking lot before a WWE event. And he just, I think he just starts cutting a promo on like some fans there. He just starts rapping in the parking lot. And it was just amazing. And that's something that John Cena, I don't know if he could still do it. I think he could. But I think John Cena would destroy Max Caster. And that's not a dig on Max Caster. Max Caster is great. He entertains me. I am a big fan of Max Caster. I think Max Caster, at the end of the day, even he himself would say, oh, John Cena would hand me my ass, you know. But you know what? John Cena is a very, you know, special person. You know, you don't get people like that all that often. Jim Morgery. No pushback on the dangers of blood being done in AEW. Think of hepatitis, AIDS, other diseases. Disgusting seeing Britt Baker in her dental garb working on a patient after her blood match the night before. Maybe they're using Jim Ross's barbecue. No, that's legit blood, my friend. That is legit blood. I'm with you because of the risks. We think of Bob Orton, that hepatitis scare with the cage. You know, people don't know that story. Google it. I understand the health concerns. You know, just because a ref puts on a pair of gloves does not, you know, diminish that risk. But these wrestlers want to do it. And these wrestlers trust each other that they're not, you know, doing things that could, you know, get them sick. So, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, the couple of times that, you know, I had to bleed a little bit doing the indie managing stuff, you know, if I had to, you know, let's say Louis, for example, because I did so much stuff with Louis, I would not be nervous, you know, if he bled and I bled. And so, I mean, it's just, you know, kind of like hygiene wise, it's a little gross. But, you know, that's their world. And blood is a very important part of storytelling. Imagine they did that barbed wire match and there was no blood. You know, be kind of stupid to have the barbed wire match then. So I hear you. it is what it is. It is what it is. And look, you don't hear wrestling fans in a major uproar, you know, about it. And a lot of them that are AEW fans, you know, they feel that, you know, you shouldn't take that risk. But when it's their AEW stars, you know, it's different. Put it on a shirt. You know, Eddie Kingston covered in blood from the last pay-per-view. You know, some people are calling it one of the greatest moments in the history of pro wrestling. It's the visual. Wrestling is about visual. It's about emotion and visual. And blood definitely enhances it. Enhances a feud. You know, I'm not going to totally criticize it, but I understand about the health risk. Do I remember the Bow Wow restaurant on Cross Bay Boulevard? Sure, I do. Absolutely. In fact, 80s.nyc. Go check out that website, 80s.nyc. It is, I'll tell everybody what it is. Back in the 1940s and the 1980s, I don't know why they didn't do it in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Maybe they did. But in the 1940s and 1980s, to document properties so they could tax people, you had people with cameras taking pictures of properties. And they would report it to New York, and they would document it, and that's how they would tax people. Somebody created a website called 80s.nyc, and you type in an address, and you'll see what your New York property looked like back in the 1980s. So I look at my dad's shopping center, and you go down the block, and you see Bow Wow, and you see, you know, some other places that used to be around. But what's cool is there's a link that you go back to the 1940s and see what your block looked like in the 1940s. So, and Jim is very glad I'm getting some opportunities. One of the few legit wrestling shows. I appreciate that. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. It's, you know, I always say hard work does pay off. Not easy. I mean, you know, it could get, you know, wear down on you, but I'm having a ball, man. I'm having a ball. Speaking of having a ball, how much time are we on? We're at 47 minutes. Okay, so we'll go slightly over an hour. Kevin Milwaukee, non-wrestling question. Is it more difficult, in my opinion, to retrieve your car when it gets towed in New York City than in most cities? Yeah. It's not as hard as before. It doesn't always get towed anymore. What happens if you owe parking tickets in New York, they put a boot on the car. Remember the segment on NXT where Tony D'Angelo, I think they put a boot on Santos Escobar's truck or car or something? I mean, that was so stupid because if you're in a mob, you don't put a boot on somebody's car. You slash their tires. You leave their rims on cinder blocks. But they were too lazy, so they rented a boot, put the boot on the wheel. That was stupid. But now in New York, if you don't pay parking tickets, a traffic cop will come around, put this device on your wheel so you can't drive your car away. And if you do, you'll just totally destroy your car. And then what happens is you got to call them up. You pay them over the phone, and then they give you a code. And then you type in the code, and the thing pops off. Problem is you got to bring the unit back to them. Otherwise, they charge you more money. So actually, I think it's easier now in New York. I don't know how other cities handle it, but it's better than what it used to be. Because believe me, I have my car towed once in my lifetime from parking tickets, and it sucked. I had to go, I think, to Whitestone, Queens, and I had to stand in some, like, it looked like almost like a junkyard. I had to stand there, pay money, and then I had to wait like an hour and a half for somebody to drive my car up. You know, so it was not fun to go all the way there to pick up your car because how do you get there? I had to take a cab. And how much money would have I demanded as a talent if I took that snake bite that the Macho Man took in 1991? You could kind of see the picture there. I don't know if you could see it. It's a little cut off. It's above the picture of my fiance. But how much would I have? Let me tell you something. And I'm being straight honest with you. If me, Don Tony, was still doing indie work as a manager, and I had the opportunity, you know, to have Jake the Snake Roberts, if the snake was not poisonous, and they said to me, "How would you like to be in a storyline where Jake handcuffs you to a rope and a snake bites your arm?" I seriously think I would do it. I think I would do it. I mean, the visual is such a wild, crazy-ass visual. I mean, I probably would do it for nothing. I mean, I don't do anything. I mean, I don't want to say I don't do anything for nothing now. I mean, I work. I expect to get something out of it. But, no, if I had the opportunity to work with a Hall of Famer in a major controversial storyline where everybody would be talking about it, I know people what people would say. What are you, stupid? The fuck you take a snake bite? What are you, dumb? You know, notice nobody said that to Macho Man. You know, I mean, obviously they wouldn't. They respect him. God rest his soul. If it was the indie circuit, if we didn't have whacked out, drugged out Jake Roberts, you know, because remember, unfortunately, his past not too long ago, you know, wasn't all that good on the indie circuit. You know, I would not want to do that with drunk Jake. Because drunk and drugged up Jake, you may might be like, there's nothing wrong with the snake. They're not poisonous. I wouldn't be able to trust him. But if it was Jake Roberts of 88, I'd seriously consider it. I'd at least consider it. Roderick Howard. Okay, couple of questions. If I was on the WCW booking committee in 1990, would I have put the title on Lex Luger? And even if the anticipated result was Sting dethroning Flair, what was that, Great American Bash? Luger could have won it, lost it to Flair, and then Flair lose it to Sting. No, I would not have done that because you wanted Sting to get that first energy of becoming World Heavyweight Champion, not Lex Luger. Would not have put the focus on Lex Luger first. So no, I would not have done that. Although Ric Flair dominated in the mid to late 80s with the world title, do I think there was a missed opportunity with Great Muta having a heavyweight title run? Not really. I thought Muta was a threat for Ric Flair's title. I thought he was a threat when he feuded with Sting. But I never really envisioned Great Muta of being WCW heavyweight champion. It would have been cool, but I don't think there was that big urgency there. You know, even WWF, you had a row of heels that, you know, had a little bit of momentum, but you never really felt that they were this big, huge threat to Hogan's championship. Muta was a little bit of a threat. Muta was legit. But no, I don't think he would have gotten the title. So, with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville continuing to be at odds on SmackDown, do I see a scenario where Sonya somehow regains GM power and an agreement is made? Maybe one runs Raw, one runs SmackDown. That was a storyline that I said a while ago that I thought could very well happen. Little friendly competition. Adam Pearce runs one, Sonya Deville runs the other. That could creatively happen now, if that's in the cards. I think it's going to come down to two things. One, if Sonya Deville wants that role. And number two, if WWE feels that Sonya Deville as just a wrestler is not going to break through. You know, remember, they have some top major players on that roster. You don't want Sonya just being used to lose and lose and lose and lose and lose or never crack through and become champion. I think Sonya Deville very well could be women's champion in the near future. But it really is going to come down to of how they feel Sonya Deville can be best used in WWE. That is possible, what you're saying. It's definitely, definitely possible. We'll see what happens. But, you know, I definitely want to see what happens with this. You know, look, creatively, the draft might be the moment where they shake things up a little bit. You know, they might just want to get through SummerSlam, Clash at the Castle, and then you start focusing on the draft. That could be the time where creatively things get shaken up a little bit. So that's possible. Is Mr. Cool Johnny Dude Charlie Conway? Because this kind of really feels like it with these questions. Thanks on replying to the Benoit question. John Cena Big Show cage match No Way Out 12. There's no answer. It's not a question. He just mentions it. Jeff Hardy and Tammy situations, how they differ from each other. People beloved Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy didn't kill anyone, thank God. Tammy unfortunately did. I think that's pretty much it with his. And now we're at the final question for tonight. I know we're not in an hour yet, but we will be once I play 15 minutes of footage. Okay, I got to share everybody with a video. The original video, I think, is about 30 minutes long or so. I edited it down to 15 minutes. Now, I know this has gotten some traction in the discussion world, and it should. It's a fun topic to bring up, but I think it's way over-exaggerated. All right, let me paint the picture to you, okay? Now, the great Malenko is before your time and even before my time. All right, we'll explain the eye in a little bit. Actually, he'll explain the eye to you in a little bit. All right, let me paint the picture. 1979, we have a big feud going on in pro wrestling, I think Knoxville, Tennessee. And you had the Knoxville Five, which was Bob Roop, Boris Malenko, Ronnie Garvin, Ron White, and Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. And we got a feud in the South, you know, different promotions feuding with each other. Now, let's also remember 1979, Memphis, the Tupelo street fight. You know, it was an interesting time for wrestling in 79. If you even look at culture, we had Disco Demolition Night that night. 79 was a weird year. You think of Iran, you know, Iran so far. No, we're talking about the country. So there was a feud going on, and the Knoxville Five, the guys, five I just said, decided that they were going to expose the business. They recorded a video. And this apparently was going to air multiple episodes, I guess, on local TV, exposing pro wrestling for what it was, sports entertainment. It never aired. And the big question Kevon Lewis asks, and a lot of people asks, how would this have affected the wrestling business if this footage aired on television in 1979? I know some people have gone on to say that it would have killed pro wrestling. Honestly, I don't think it would have done a fucking thing. If anything, I think it would have blackballed these wrestlers. Now, I'm not showing all five because honestly, I don't think anybody really cares much about Ron White, with no disrespect to him. But what I did was I took this 30-minute video and I trimmed it down to 15 minutes. And you will see a few wrestlers. You'll see Boris Malenko, Ronnie Garvin, Cowboy Bob Orton Jr., the father of Randy Orton. You will see them expose the business. And honestly, if that would have aired in 1979, what I think would have happened is, number one, wrestling magazines would not have covered it. We didn't have internet. We didn't have the chatter. We didn't really even have wrestling hotlines. So that might have been a little bit of a buzz, and it might have hurt the Knoxville area as far as pro wrestling, but they would have been labeled as outcasts, and it would have been blackballed in a lot of territories. That would not have gained traction. It would have not killed pro wrestling. You wouldn't have had all these mainstream nationwide news outlets covering it because they all thought wrestling was fake already. Understand, pro wrestling in the 70s and the 80s, before, you know, WrestleMania and The Rock and wrestling before Hogan, you know, it was considered, you know, underground. Wrestling was fake. That fake shit. News did not take wrestling seriously. You had some exceptions. Warner Wolf, CBS, you know, would always cover wrestling in Madison Square Garden. I have some of those old videos. Love it. Love it. I got to share it with you one day. But, you know, mainstream world would not have picked up on this story. And let's not forget, and see, I have nothing against younger wrestling fans who are not wrestling fans in 79, who are not even alive in 79 that covered this story. But the fact is when you're too young, you forget about things like this. Anybody who's older, maybe closer to my age, maybe older. Anybody remember Eddie Mansfield? Anybody remember that infamous show? This was right around 2020 with John Stossel getting slapped in the ear from Dr. D, David Schultz. You would have had more Dr. D's come out slapping people in the head to shut up the people that I'm about to show you on the video. This man bladed on a special news story to show how wrestling is fake and red is green. You bleed, you get more money. Did that get any traction? People that love pro wrestling were not going to change their mind how they felt about it because a few people would have come out. So no, they would not have killed wrestling. But you be the judge. This is very interesting video. Let's flash back to 1979. I think you all will probably enjoy Cowboy Bob Orton the most. But would this have killed pro wrestling? No, wouldn't have done a fucking thing. Check this out. 15 minutes. Sit back, relax, enjoy. I will show you the small box and I will enlarge it at times too. I want you to see my facial reactions as I watch some of this.
Hello, my name is Bob Roop. And my function here today is to introduce a documentation that I'm calling and the people associated with me are calling Plan B. And there's a lot of people out there that might recognize me, and those people would be called wrestling fans. The greatest majority of you won't recognize me because you're not wrestling fans.
I will say this, no matter how much they were feuding at the time, talk about disrespecting a business that made you money. Some of these guys were wrestling for 20 years. You know, that's spitting on the business. Very surprised. Well, you know what? I'm not surprised. The reason why these guys didn't get blackballed, because it never aired. I think they pussied out. I mean, but honestly, to me, this story is not a major story. It is cool to realize that back in 1979, 43 plus years ago, you know, this almost, you know, was shown to the, you know, that southern area of the wrestling world, but it wouldn't have gone any further than that. Continue.
In truth, my occupation is that of a professional wrestler. My purpose here today is to tell you about professional wrestling, not what you're used to seeing, not the burlesque sort of carnival sideshow type wrestling show that you're used to seeing, but what wrestling, professional wrestling, in actuality really is. I've been offered a variety of jobs, teaching, coaching, working for the government, but none of them matched the money first and, in a way, the mystique that professional wrestling had to offer.
I get to the point.
I'd always heard that professional wrestling was fake. We've all heard that. But I didn't know. And it is a very closed society. I found that out right away. Well, I've been in wrestling 10 years now. In those 10 years, I've gone from one being awed by that mystique and being taken in by it. I've gone from one being, in a sense, grateful to be a member of a secret club, a closed fraternity, you might say, and that's what professional wrestling is. I've been a preliminary wrestler. I've been a main event wrestler. I've been a booker. And a quick definition, a booker is a man that works in a particular wrestling area that arranges all the matches. He directs the television show to create that certain effect that will try to draw people into the wrestling arenas to see those matches. He secures different wrestling talents.
It gets better,
talents.
Everyone. I know it's a little boring to start, but
the actual
it'll get better.
He's the director. He's called a booker in wrestling vernacular. I've been a booker.
entire spectrum of experience in the wrestling business. And I've been in it 10 years now, professional wrestling. And it is just that business. And I just want to say one thing. In all the time I've been in professional wrestling, I have never, ever had a real wrestling match. Every match that I've been in, or so-called match, has been merely an exhibition that was designed to attract fans.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. I know 1979 people look differently, but if you were a male or a female, you find that face attractive? Could you sit on that? I sure wouldn't. Ew.
To come in, to see the matches, to get their money. And the only problem with that is that the matches have been billed as they've been tried to create the effect that these matches were, in effect, going to be real matches, that the people were mad at each other. That has never been the case. I've wrestled in Europe, the Far East, all over the world, Australia, Japan, and all over the United States, and I've never had a real match. You have no reason, most of you out there that are seeing this documentary have no reason to take my word for it. You don't know me, and unless you're a wrestling fan, you've never seen me before. For that reason, I would like to offer some corroboration. I'd like to introduce a friend of mine, a gentleman named Larry Simon. His experience, 25 years of wrestling. Larry, I'll let you tell your own story.
Thank you, Bob. I'm used to being in front of the TV cameras, but in a different light. I'm used to being a performer.
This is pretty good.
As Bob said, my name is Larry Simon. I'm from Newark, New Jersey, and I've been wrestling professionally, may I correct Bob, 27 years. I have had, I'd say, 4 or 5 years of amateur experience. I have, from the amateurs, became a professional at a young age of 18 years old. And I am now 47 years old. And I've been wrestling all this time. I was in the professional ranks at 18, as I just got done saying. And when I was 18, I was in the preliminary matches, and I stayed.
And, as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, I think people would have fell asleep watching this shit in 1979. I mean, look, for wrestling fans in that area, they would be shocked to hear wrestlers saying this. But, I think about that Morton Downey Jr. show. What was his name? Jim Nelson or something? Remember when Dr. D showed up and was going to beat the shit out of him? They talked about wrestling and if it was fake and this is, I mean, Dr. D was still protecting the business at the time, but you had people over and over again. You look at the local video. It's on my YouTube channel right now. I posted it 10 years ago when Vern Gagne was exposed and was confronted. Larry Zbysko and Bob Backlund, you may not even know I have this on my channel. Larry Zbysko and Bob Backlund were wrestling at the Meadowlands. I think it was the Meadowlands, and you hear them, Larry Zbysko telling Bob Backlund what to do next. And they interviewed Larry Zbysko. I felt bad. They interviewed Vern Gagne. I felt so bad for Vern. He looked like a deer in headlights, and he's on Channel 9 News here locally. I taped it myself. I put it online for everyone. He's looking. He's like, man, oh, man, I would have to ask Larry, what's the meaning of this? Isn't it his son-in-law, too? I mean, he's like, I have to. And did that gain traction? Did the whole world jump all over it? I think that pro wrestling in 1985 was 10 times bigger than what it was in 79. So if that didn't kill wrestling, if, people going on Morton Downey didn't kill wrestling, if all of those shows that said wrestling was fake when Vince went on Downey, if none of that killed wrestling, what makes people think that in 1979 that would have done anything? It would have just blackballed the... Look, he's 47 years old. Probably didn't give a shit by that point. The Cowboy Bob Orton stuff will surprise you, though. I'll let you watch the rest of it.
And in the preliminary matches for approximately... on the New York area. When I went out from the New York area, I went to Houston, Texas. I then took on a so-called gimmick or an image as a Russian, and my name was changed to the Great Malenko, and I have been wrestling for the last 20 years as the Great Malenko. And my trademark through the years, people that have been watching wrestling, people that have followed wrestling, have known me as a person that stands in that camera each week with his eye cocked like this. And this is my shtick. This is my gimmick. I would say something in reference to this. My voice would change. I would accumulate an accent as I'm talking to you here and now. I am 230 pounds of mind and muscular coordination that is unbeatable. This is something that I am an expert at. But as well as the light side, I would like to show you something else or tell you something. I have never had in all the 27 years of being a professional wrestling what you call a real wrestling match. You can call it whatever you want. It was a planned type of match. I knew who was going to win, and I knew who was going to lose. It was all set up before I ever went out to wrestle.
Years, I've been in wrestling 18 years.
Ronnie Garvin.
I've known him at least 10 or 12 years. Professor Malenko and I, we had some great matches that people believe. Even at times, I was almost believing him. That's how great of an actor I consider myself. So's Professor. I respect his talent as an actor, as a performer. I'm from Montreal, and I was brought up in the streets, fighting with baseball bats, chains, and wrestling. Professional wrestling to me was really something that I looked up to when I was a kid, and I wanted to become a professional wrestler, and I did. And I was kind of disappointed, in a way not, because money was good. I made good money. I've been a top wrestler for the past 10 years, and especially in part of Tennessee, around Knoxville area, I'm known as a one-man gang. People really believe in me. Well, I can fight, but all my wrestling career, I have yet to have a real wrestling match. All my matches have been arranged. I went out in the ring and used chairs and gimmicks that wrestlers call. And I'm good at it because I convince the people. People think I'm a maniac. Actually, I'm not. I'm a great actor, just like a movie actor that can make you cry. Well, I can make you come out of your seat and jumping up and down. Create excitement. It's my job. That's what I get paid for. And I've got many friends. Well, as a matter of fact, I've got five good friends in wrestling that we had great battles, grudges, cage matches, chain matches, that I would bet my life that I could make anybody believe it. But actually, after it's over, we're probably drinking a beer, smoking, eating, you name it, we do it. Loving together. Parties. That's a way of life in wrestling. Now, I've got a good friend of mine. I've got great respect for him. He's a great performer. I love to work with him. The word work means wrestle.
Uh-huh.
Because actually, we work together. I want to introduce you to him. His name is Bob Orton Jr.
Hey, Ronnie, I appreciate the introduction. They didn't save the best for last, believe me. They saved the youngest for last. Because these are honest people, and the youngest should go last. But ladies and gentlemen, I would like to tell you this. I started going to the wrestling matches at the age of 5 years old.
He probably we relate to the most, not because it's Randy Orton's dad, but because what he tells the car story, it's almost like you could picture us in that car experience the same thing. This is a pretty cool story. Check this out. And we'll close it out right after this.
And I believed everything I seen. I mean, when people got thrown out of the ring and got split open and the blood flew, hey, I believed it. And yes, I become excited. But then one night, I seen a man in the middle of a wrestling ring, and another man named Fred Blassie looked like he was ripping his eyes out of his head. And I broke down into tears, and I actually went into hysterics. I was hard to control. You know who that man was? My father, Bob Orton Sr. And that night home in the car, when I was 8 years old, I'm still crying. I'm wondering how Dad can see while he's driving down the road. Well,
smart.
Dad told me, Bob, there's nothing to worry about. Everything that goes on in a wrestling ring is a fabrication. It's something that you do to make wrestling fans believe that what you're doing is real, but in actuality, it's not. And I'll tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Since the time I started professional wrestling, I'm 29 now. I started pro wrestling when I was 21. I have never had a real wrestling match. And you can look at it as good or bad, whatever, but what I'm saying right now is that when you see professional wrestling, the winner and the loser is determined. The worst any wrestler that I know has ever been hurt in the ring, broken arm, broken leg, is an accident. And, of course, we've already seen Professor Malenko, Ron Wright, out here showing the scars where an occasional hot-tempered audience may use a knife, slice a man, throw a rock at a man's head, or whatever. But what I'm going to do right now is I've told my story. I've told you the truth. We're honest people. I'm going to give this back to Bob Roop because he is the man.
Ladies and gentlemen, those of you watching this, what you're seeing is historic in a sense because of the fact that nobody's ever had the courage and in a sense the dignity to come out here and say the things they've been saying. We've all been conditioned to protect the wrestling industry because it is big business. It's a billion-dollar business. They only report about $330 million of it a year. Third largest spectator sport. But it is big business, and we've been conditioned to protect it, even though it is a fraud. Well, this is just the outline. This is the first part of a mini-series that we have planned. And in later segments, we're going to talk about, well, the second question I was ever asked after is wrestling fake was, where does the blood come from? We're going to do a whole segment on where does the blood come from. We're going to show you exactly where it comes from. We're going to demonstrate terms of the wrestling business, how the actual manipulations work. That's going to be another segment. We're going to do a segment about the money. Like I just said, $1 billion a year earned and only $330 million reported. Huh. The IRS is surprised about that, I imagine. We're going to talk about legal prostitution, great big muscular wrestlers being in effect just prostitutes. Prostitutes with muscles, we'll call that segment. We're going to talk about the monopoly of the wrestling business. It's a monopoly, and we're going to talk about the political connections that enable it to stay a monopoly. We're going to talk
about... I don't know. When you start thinking about that, a monopoly against what? You're like, I don't know. They obviously had a big-time hatred, feuding with other, promoters at the time. But again, you look back at 1979. If Bruno was part of this, superstar Billy Graham, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Harley Race, if those five would have been in the video, then maybe it would circulate. That wasn't done anything. They would have been blackballed. Every pro wrestler that kept the secret sacred at that time would have hated those guys. They would have done everything to protect the business even more. You look, like I said, I brought up the Morton Downey Jr. episode because that's one of my favorite shows I've ever seen. and you had this Jim Nelson guy talking about everything being fake and this and that, you know, and Dr. D is like, I'll show you how fake it is when I come up there and punch you right in your goddamn mouth. That's not a very good impersonation. But thing is that, you know, you think about what happened with John Stossel getting slapped in the ear. Those guys would have all had a target on their back, and they would have. It would have been a matter of time. Trust me, I think the great Malenko would have, his eye would have been permanent like that. These were obviously very bitter people at the time. I'm very surprised that Cowboy Bob Orton was part of that, but it never aired. It never aired. But still, even if it did, everybody else in pro wrestling would have just tightened up and defended pro wrestling even more. And the fans that would have just kept going. You know, again, you go back the 80s, which wrestling was much bigger in the 80s than it was in 79. And you had show after show after show. I definitely recommend. In fact, you know, I should have done this earlier. When I go like this, I will put the link up where you could watch the footage that I put up back in, you know, that I recorded from 1985. And all you keep seeing, this is right around the time when Hulk Hogan with Richard Belzer put him in the sleeper hold and he cracked his head open. You know, you watch this and all you keep seeing over and over again is wrestling is fake. 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 You know, and it didn't hurt wrestling at all. It didn't hurt wrestling at all. This would not have done a damn thing in 1979. So anyway, with that said, I am out of here. I hope you enjoyed this Q&A. And definitely leave your feedback. It is very much appreciated. Now, we will do the next Q&A. Let me look at my calendar. The next Q&A will be Wednesday, August 10th. No, Thursday, August 11th. I forgot. I'm recording it Wednesday, but you're watching this Thursday. So Thursday, August 11th will be your next episode for the mailbag. If you want to send a question that you'd like for me to answer on these mailbags, you could email me. DonTony@DonTony.com. Or in about a week, I will post a thread in the community section here on YouTube, and you can post your question there. Either way, it will be answered on this show. And I thank you for tuning in. Be well, everybody. Stay safe.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who've claimed they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.